I know. Well, I'm sitting here in a beautiful park in the middle of London, and it's a beautiful, what would you call it, an autumn day?
Yeah, veering into winter at the moment, but autumn.
It's gorgeous, and I'm here with Nick Williams, and we were just talking about how he would describe himself, because more and more job titles are something we create. So, work philosopher is the title for today. Tell me exactly what does that mean?
I think I'm still working out what it means. But my calling and vocation seems to have been to help people reimagine what work can be.
Yeah.
Certainly in the UK, I don't know what it's like in New Zealand, but certainly in the UK, most of us grew up with the idea that as long as you're not enjoying it, as long as you're miserable, as long as you're suffering, that's real work.
Yeah.
And you deserve to be paid for it. But the idea that you can do something joyful that you love and that you're happy doing and get paid for it just is not in most people's consciousness. It wasn't in my consciousness when I was growing up. So in a way, my whole vocation has been, you know, changing my life around in the last 20 years and then inspiring other people to do the same thing.
Well, on that point, actually, I did want to talk to you about that. Quite some time ago, you made a change. What were you doing? What was it, some 20 years ago before you were a work philosopher?
Selling very expensive computers to Japanese banks in the city of London.
Sounds inspired?
Well, it was okay.
Yeah.
I guess what?
What led you to that work?
I suppose as a young man in my 20s, I wanted to be successful. You know, I always had an urge and a drive to be successful, but in my 20s that meant money and a car and status and all that kind of stuff. So I set out to get them and I got them and then went, is this it?
Yeah.
In my late 20s, thought, okay, you know, I've got everything I thought would make me happy and I'm miserable. What's wrong with me?
Yeah.
So that led me then into a whole period of kind of self-questioning and into counselling for myself and then in just a kind of lifelong, I hope, interest in personal growth and personal development, which I've now turned into my career.
So just going back, because I'm sure a lot of people can identify with the sort of the misery and sort of getting to this goalpost that you think means everything, and then you stand there and you think,
is this it?
Is this it?
Yeah.
What were some of the symptoms of that unhappiness?
Misery.
Yeah, misery is bigger. Yeah. What did that look like? What we have noticed
kind
about
of
Nick?
Waking up in the morning and thinking, I don't want to go to work.
Yeah.
You know, that simple in a way.
Yeah.
It's like my feeling like I had a spirit in me that was so much bigger than what I was doing.
Yeah.
But in a way terrified also to let go of what I was doing, because, you know, so much of my own identity was tied up in prestige, income, job title, dealing with expensive computers, dealing with financial institutions.
Yeah.
You know, it looked like I was a successful person because I was doing these things, but I knew deep down I didn't feel like a success at all.
Yeah. So what's some of the main reasons for change then, making that change? You said you went on a voyage of sort of personal discovery. You went to a career counsellor, did you?
Not so much career counselling, but really more, I got involved in something called Alternatives in London, which still runs to this day. It's been going for about 26 years, and I got involved firstly just as going to as an audience member and then got involved in running it and then ran it for a number of years, which is a kind of London platform for personal spiritual growth.
Right.
So, you know, I grew up in a fairly ordinary family and, to me, relatively uninspiring kind of household.
Yeah.
And then to go to a place like that where it was all about possibility, you know, that we're amazing beings, that it's all about, you know, going beyond your fears and moving into something greater, a greater sense of yourself. To me, that was like, why didn't anybody tell me this when I was growing up?
Yeah.
You know, so it was like inspiration for my parched soul.
Yeah.
So for years, it's like, oh, I just want to, I want to put myself in this kind of environment.
On that point, what's your thought? What's your philosophy on why aren't people told about these things? Why aren't they inspired when we're growing up?
Well, I think, you know, partly it's probably to do with the kind of factory age a couple of hundred years ago, which was, you know, work especially just became a mechanical process that we all had to do to survive materially. So it's like we didn't educate people to be inspired about themselves. We educated people to slot into jobs that needed doing to keep an economy going.
Because it could be dangerous.
Yeah,
it's like
we were funneling people into careers.
Right.
And in a way, we're still doing that 200 years later. But more and more people are going, hang on, you know, I got funneled into this and now I'm going, I want to do something else.
Yeah. Yeah, interesting. Interesting imagery. People being funneled into the
It almost was, I think. And to some extent still is. But it's like the sausage factory isn't working and what we're churning out isn't relevant anymore. So it's like there's a big mismatch going on.
So back then, what gave you the confidence and the courage to turn away from that whole identity that had been forged on what other people might have been, to a successful man, to leave it all behind, to...
Yeah. Well, two things. You know, I say that we do change through either desperation or inspiration.
Right.
So I was both desperate and a bit inspired.
Right.
But mainly I was desperate.
Yeah.
I was just so unhappy. And,
yeah.
You know, I think what tipped me over the edge in the end was, you know, what am I going to feel like if I do this for another 40 years?
Yeah.
And I thought, I'm just going to die emotionally, spiritually. I might even die physically.
Yeah.
So on one hand, it was like the pain of it motivated me to change.
Right.
But on the other hand, I had begun to get involved personal development world.
Yeah.
I started to give one or two talks.
Yeah.
I started to kind of get involved in that area, and I thought, you know, I remember I had given a few talks and I started learning transactional analysis and pop psychology.
Mm-hmm.
And when I gave my first talk, just at a TA conference, just for a couple of hours, I thought, this is it.
Right.
This is what I want to be doing.
Right.
So my, you know, advice to anybody else is don't just think about what you want to do next.
Right.
Give yourself an experience of what you're thinking about doing next.
Yeah.
Because if it really resonates with you, it's like, I'd come home to myself.
Yeah.
When I stood up in front of just 20 people for a couple of hours, it was like, this is what I'm here for.
Right.
This is the work that I'm going to do.
No doubt.
Yeah. I felt, you know, that word, I was in my element.
Yeah.
And then I just had to trust that.
Yeah.
And go, you know, this has been a few, you know, I did a few more things, but like it was a tiny part of my life, but
right.
I made the decision to say, what is a tiny part of my life I want to grow into being the whole of my life.
So were you, did you sort of toe dip a little bit before you made a major change? So
yeah.
You were still sort of busy in your computer world.
Yeah.
And you started to go off and trial a little bit of doing public speaking.
Yeah, so I did a bit of that.
Yeah.
And I was training with a woman called Julie Hay, and Julie got me a few days' work, so I'd kind of take a day off from work. I'd go and disappear on Thursday night as a time manager, as being a salesman, and I'd appear on Friday morning as a time management trainer in an organisation, and then go back to work on a Monday morning. And I'd got into the beginning of the flow of it.
Yes, right.
But it was nowhere near enough to have built a business on at that stage.
So you didn't leap like a lemming. Is it a lemming? Is it
a lemming? Well, to some extent I did, but not just on pure faith.
Yeah.
A lot of faith, but really having tried something out and thought, yes, I like it, and yes, I've begun to earn some money out of it.
Yeah. A bit like, was it Joseph Campbell who said, when you follow your bliss, started opening and...
Sure, they did.
Still must have taken a bit of courage to leave the whole thing behind.
Yeah,
because you went into self-employment straight away,
pretty much. Even though I say it myself, it was probably the most courageous thing I've ever done. But I can only say in retrospect, it was the best thing I ever did, because had I stayed until I felt more confident, I'd probably still be there.
Right. Yes,
waiting to feel confident. So for anybody listening, I would also say, you know, I do a half joke, but I'm half serious when I say it. You know, I had probably 5% inspiration, 5% self-confidence, and 5% self-belief, and 85% fear, doubt, and uncertainty.
Yeah. Yeah.
But those, you know, that 15% was enough to get me to where I am today, to start me off to get to where I am today.
Yeah, because I guess the temperature's pretty high on that sort of the 85%.
Yeah.
It's pretty hot water.
Yeah, I think you only need that spark of inspiration.
Yeah.
You keep flaming, you know, keep fanning the flames of it.
Yeah.
And it can become a fire. You know.
If you were making a change again, like that, you know, looking back, is there anything that you would do differently, or would amplify, do more of?
Yeah, you know, in it's easy to say in retrospect that I would do so many things differently.
Yeah.
But there again, I'm where I pretty much wanted to be today. So it's hard to say whether, you know, I did it wrong and I could have done it better, or whether in a way it's all been perfect and I've got to where I wanted to be in the end. You know, it's hard to say. But in retrospect, I probably would have taken more baby steps. I would have understood more about how to build a business around something that you're passionate about. I had no roadmap for that at all.
Yeah.
I kind of made it all up as I went.
Yeah. Which is something we were talking about. You're developing a bit of a roadmap now for things that I want. So you're taking the knowledge you didn't have back then, you've got now, and sharing it with other people about. Tell me a little bit about this. It's about developing your own coaching practice.
Yeah, well, there's a program. Well, we just literally, you know, a couple of days ago, launched one new program that I've developed called Passions into Profits. And I think the hardest thing for so many people, and it certainly was for me, and I see it in my coaching practice and when I speak all over the world, you know, just taking those first steps from being employed to being entrepreneurial.
Mm.
So many people think about it, plan it, want to do it but never actually take those first steps.
Yeah.
So the program I just launched is about how do you take those first baby steps of being entrepreneurial whilst you're still employed.
Right.
How do you take your big idea, chunk it down and earn your first income out
yeah.
of it.
Yeah.
So that's that one. And then, you know, I do find, because I make my living out of writing and speaking and coaching, that a lot of people come to me because they want to have a business like mine as well, and a lifestyle like mine.
Yeah.
So the program that I'm just writing at the moment is how, to some extent, how I built my personal development business from the idea to being, you know, in a way, a kind of global business.
Yeah.
You know, I have clients in, you know, I've given talks in 15 different countries, but I've sold products in probably dozens of countries.
Yeah.
So it's the roadmap of how I've built my business and how I've seen other people do it.
Yeah.
You know, which is real, realistic, and kind of inspiring.
Yeah.
Because, like, you know, for a lot of people, a business and personal development, there's no career plan.
That's right.
You know, it's not like you suddenly join a company and there's a career plan to be
yeah.
successful. To some extent, you have to create your own plan.
And you're, you know, the marketing man, you're the
yeah.
writer, you're the product
yeah.
developer.
Yeah, you're
yeah, but it's quite a nice, because what would you say represents your new life now and what represented your old life?
My old life was about boredom, frustration, feeling underutilized, feeling stuck to some extent, I think, and uninspired.
Yeah.
So my current life is about freedom.
Yeah.
It's about creativity, contribution.
You
know, I think that's the biggest thing that motivates me is, you know, having pioneered in my own life and knowing that I now teach other people how to pioneer in their lives and knowing that, you know, thousands of lives are different because of that. To me,
yeah.
what a joy.
Yeah.
Spirituality is probably
yeah.
at the heart of my life
integrated
now.
Integrated into your work.
Yeah.
Hard to do selling computers.
Yeah. And kind of perpetual growth.
Yeah.
You know, every day is good and every day is challenged to grow. So, you know, the opposite of boredom.
Yeah. That's great. And plus you've got your chief cook and bottle washer, but you get the challenge and the variety and the creative expression.
Yeah.
So another thing that I wanted to ask you, Nick, is that this topic of passion, you know, because some people think it's irresponsible to even, you know, suggest to people that they could live and work with passion. How important do you think it is for people to work and live with passion?
I think it's crucial to a life of well-being, really.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the guiding quote in my life comes from Khalil Gibran, which is, your work is your love made visible.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I think that's the highest vision of work, and it's a vision of work that most of us never hear when we're growing up.
Right.
So, you know, I believe that each of us is a personality, but we have a soul, and our soul wants to express love and its creativity and its talent and its gifts. And if we're not doing that in our life, I think we're living a half life.
Mm.
So I think obviously we have on one level a responsibility for material existence, but on another level we have a responsibility to our own heart and our own soul. And I don't think that... you know, most of us have been shown how to match those responsibilities. So, you know, most of us have been told, well, you either work for money, because that's what you have to do, that's what life's all about, just work for money, don't expect to love it, just suffer along and struggle along.
Mm.
Or you can work for love and you can do something meaningful, but don't expect to get paid for it.
Mm.
So most of us have grown up with the money or love dilemma.
Right.
And my work is very much about having brought those two things together for myself,
yeah.
saying, you know, everyone can do that.
Yeah.
Everyone could work for love and money, but the starting point is, well, what are you here for? You know, what I call the work you were born to do. What would you do if you only did it out of love? And then get clever at doing it, and then get clever at getting paid for doing it.
Yeah. What do you think, what does passion look like for you? How do people know? Because a lot of people, there was one author who said only 10% of people are actually working and living with passion.
Mm.
Would you believe in that statistic? Do you think
I would think it might even be smaller.
Right. Yeah. What would you put it as?
Depends what industry you go in. If you go into the accounting industry, probably 1%.
Yeah.
You know, in other areas, you know, creative industries, you might find 20-30%. So.
So if it is so small, even as small as, you know, 2-3%, or even up to 10 at the high, then a lot of people say they don't know what they're passionate about.
Mm.
So what tips would you give people to say?
Well, in my free program, on my website, I've got a kind of the 9 signposts that I help people use.
Oh, okay.
So the major ones, I'll give you the first kind of few of them.
Yeah.
Number one is just to ask that question, what would inspire me?
Yeah.
You know, most people don't even ask themselves that question.
No.
So just number one, ask yourself, what would inspire you? Because that question was the pivotal question that changed my life.
Mm-hmm.
From, you know, being uninspired to saying, so what would inspire me? And then the answers began to come to me.
Yeah.
You know, what would inspire you is to teach other people to be creative, to maybe write books, to touch the lives of other people in some way.
Yeah, just come in little whispers, little, little knowings, intuitive insights. What we call life.
For many people, it's just the willingness to ask the questions, and then, as you so rightly say, listen to the answers. Because the second way I think most people come to discover what they'd love to do is what behind what I call their greatest resistance.
Mm-hmm.
It's the thing they've most told themselves they could never do. The thing that most terrifies them, the most scares them, that they spend all their energy going, I could never do that because.
I'll never make a living from being an author.
So that's the second way, and I work with a lot of people to say, well, what's the thing you've most talked yourself out of? What's the thing that most terrifies you?
Yeah.
And then to help them see there's probably some real juice there. And then lead them to seeing how the fear is actually a pointer to their gifts in a way.
Right.
And then the third way I help a lot of people is I call it in your shadow life.
Right.
It's like the area that you gravitate towards, but you never quite put your own creativity at the center of your life. So you might work in a bookshop because one day you want to write a book.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
By working in a bookshop, you get to be surrounded by books, you get to meet people that love books, you might even get to meet a few authors. So you're creatively engaged in the area that you love, but you never quite put pen to paper and write your own book. So that's why I talk about the kind of shadow life. And for me, you know, being involved with alternatives that I mentioned earlier, you know, that is a platform for promoting people like Wayne Dyer, Deepak Chopra, the mind, body, spirits gurus of the world. But there came a point where I realized that by promoting them, I was discounting the fact that actually I wanted to be a speaker. I was the organizer of other people's voices. And my shadow life was actually I have a voice of my own that I want to get out. But even to acknowledge to myself that I had a voice of my own.
And it's someone might listen and, you know,
and take me seriously. And actually act on what I said that scared the heck out of me.
So it's one of the things I often talk about is who inspires you, say, in a way, or who or what, and so you're living in the shadow of what inspires you, but you're forgetting that that's actually your soul purpose too.
It's almost like
you can be that person too.
You know, you're warming your hands on somebody else's fire rather than lighting your own fire. Kind of idea.
So that was the big day in the park for dogs.
We're a dog magnet.
So that was three of the points that you mentioned. Is there another?
Well, there's another six of them.
Yeah,
I don't know
on
if
your
you
website.
Want to,
what's, what's your?
So if people want to go to inspired-entrepreneur.com, inspired-entrepreneur.com, there's a free program on there. You can just give us your name and email address, and you can go download it. There's a text, audio, and video program that goes through what I call the 9 signposts.
Yeah.
That there's three of them, and I'm not withholding the others. But
another dog might come and jump up on me. Now the other thing I want to ask you, Matt, is a lot of people come, a lot of New Zealanders, you know, anyone listening might see my Kiwi accent, many New Zealanders come to London hoping to pursue their passion. What advice would you give to Kiwis wanting to come and work and live in London?
Go download the free programs so you can really get to it. Really identify what your passions are. You know, because I think, again, like so many people discount their passions. It's like, I'm passionate about that, but.
So the buts
get in the way. So number one, be clear about it. Number two, I think, you know, we touched on this, you know, off kind of, you know, this conversation, but this idea of being a Renaissance soul. For many people, what they're passionate about is not just one thing. So this idea that your passion could have several strands to it. So allow yourself to envisage your life where maybe you do more than one thing.
Eclectic.
And that's not cheating, or it's not being a jack of all trades. It's actually a very valid way to live and work. So number two, you know, allow yourself to have several strands. Number three, get yourself into environments where people are going to support that. There are so many dream bashers and naysayers, as I call them, out there, especially in London. Or everywhere, but you know, there's just as many in London as anywhere else. So, you know, one of the things I do is I hold kind of every couple of weeks now, I hold kind of weekly groups for inspired entrepreneurs to get together in London, and sometimes I give a talk, somebody else gives the talk. But it's a place where like-minded, inspired, passionate people can come together. So the third thing would be build yourself a support system.
So the Kiwis coming can hook into their
anybody. There's nothing really to join. You can just come along, you know, or you can join our premium membership and get free access.
I'll mention it to the lady over here when I meet you tomorrow.
The fourth thing would be, you know, I'm a great passionate believer in baby steps.
Yeah.
So just take lots of little steps in a new direction. Yeah. Don't expect something to come out fully formed. It won't.
Yeah.
Take baby steps. And fifth, sometimes, you know, take a bold step.
Yeah.
Just kind of raise your sights and go for something that
yeah.
scares the heck out of you.
Yeah.
You know, it's something I think about a lot, but I think sometimes, you know, success comes to the people that are willing to put themselves in a place of real discomfort for a
yeah.
while and
yeah.
stay there
yeah.
until they grow into feeling yeah. more comfortable.
Yeah.
So don't stay comfortable.
Yeah.
Get uncomfortable in order to
right.
grow.
So on that point, is there anything, you know, what's going to be your next big step? What's that thing? Is there anything that you're uncomfortable about that you're going to?
Yeah, I have kind of two questions that I live by, you know.
Yeah.
Well, the major question really is like, what will inspire me next, or how will I inspire myself next?
Mm-hmm.
And for me, probably the biggest challenge my whole life has been kind of self-value and self-worth.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, doing more stuff and charging for it
yeah.
is the thing that, you know,
yeah.
is always my growing edge.
Yeah.
So taking my 20 years of experience and packaging it and sharing it with people and charging for it and creating some higher end kind of mentorship programs and believing that I'm worth it. That's always, you know, my biggest challenge is believing that I'm worth it.
Yeah. I think that's whether it's a global epidemic, this sort of, you know, self, what do you call it? I thought you use another word for self-esteem, don't you?
Self-worth, self-belief.
Yeah, self-valuing. And I think that's where people do find it hard to charge a fee for their services. But also you're obviously clearly very giving and your resources.
Yeah.
So
for me, I'm a great giver. It's learning to be a better receiver
balance.
As well.
Yeah.
Letting stuff in and valuing myself more is always, probably will be for my whole life, my growing edge.
Yeah. So as we bring this interview to a close, a lot of one of my favourite quotes is inspiring people are like vitamins for our souls.
Mm.
So who are the people that most inspire you? You know, who are your vitamins?
In terms of kind of spiritual teachers, probably Marianne Williamson has been one of my kind of great spiritual teachers. A guy called Stephen Pressfield, and if you've heard of him, he wrote a wonderful book called The War of Art. Not The Art of War, that's a different book from something confusing.
Yeah, The War of Art.
It's the best book I've ever read on being creative.
Oh, interesting.
I think it's even better than Julia Cameron's The Artist's
Way.
And I was lucky enough to get to meet him a couple of years ago in at his home in California and interview him. And not only was his book a massive source of inspiration, but he was as well. He's just a really lovely guy. So, you know, some of the kind of big names inspire me, but more and more over the years, it's like even the people I work with inspire me.
Yeah.
You know, my clients inspire me. The way that people deal with fear, with challenges, with vulnerability, you know, finding a part of themselves bigger than all the small stuff. That's what
inspires exciting
me.
Seeing people fly, isn't it?
Yeah. And just seeing, you know, helping people light the spark in themselves and just seeing where they go with that. Like the, you know, woman that I've just been coaching, she had a successful business, they sold it a couple of years ago, and her husband, you know, she's reached menopause time, and she was saying, I'd love to do something to help other women so that they don't have to be as miserable as I was.
Yeah.
And she's now set up something called the Menopause Trust, and she's just run her first courses, and she's rolling it out to become a national organisation.
Oh, right.
I think, good on you, woman. You know, like you've taken the pain in your own life and turned it into hopefully a gift and a support to other people. And I think that's what inspires me, because all of us suffer in some way, and when we take our suffering and turn it somehow into a gift for other people, to me that's inspiring.
Yeah. Well, that's great. Well, the reason that we're here is because I was inspired by your book that you wrote, was it over a decade ago?
It came out in 1999, so the world we were born to.
Yeah, and tell me a little bit, because that was your very first book.
Yeah.
A lot of people say, man, how do you ever... Quite a big commitment to write a book, isn't it?
Yeah.
What kept you going? What was the inspiration for the book?
I suppose since a kid, I probably had a dream that said one day maybe I'll write a book. And as I kind of reached my late 30s, I was like, okay, well, is this a fantasy or is this a dream waiting to happen? So I hadn't really written very much. You know, I'd spoken, I'd coached, I'd done workshops. So I began to write some ideas down and to formulate what might be in a book. And then eventually I got to a stage where I had like a publishing proposal. And then I began, you know, the big step for me was to show it to publishers.
Yeah.
Or am I just going to get laughed out of
whatever? Yeah.
And then, you know, blow me, one of them said, yeah, we'd like to publish it.
Yeah.
And that scared the heck out of me.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my God, you're taking me seriously. But that threshold from becoming a wannabe author to becoming a published author was probably one of the most exciting thresholds of it.
Yeah.
You know, I was doing reasonably well before I was an author, but being an author has opened, you know, so many doors. And it just gives you kind of credibility and, you know, people want to talk to you in ways that they don't want to talk to you necessarily when you're not an author. So, A, I love being creative, so it was a wonderful creative experience. And also, I love being an author. Being an author has just opened so many doors and created friendships and all sorts of connections around the world that have, to me, just been a massive blessing. You know, we're sitting here because I wrote a book.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, my world has expanded so much by being an author.
Yeah, by putting your neck out and and being not being afraid.
No, you know.
Put your craft out there and your ideas. And
I
your
suppose
properties.
For me, and put my heart out there.
Yeah, that's right.
You know,
right.
And I think that's the big fear.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, we're afraid to show up and put our heart out to the world for fear of ridicule and all the rest of it. And I suppose if I could have one, you know, share one tip with anybody listening to this, it would be put your heart out there. Show up and put your heart out there.
Yeah, just show up.
Yeah. And, you know, it won't always be well received. Sometimes you'll get criticised.
Yeah.
But a lot of the time you're just going to get people saying thank you.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Well, I'd like to say thank you for writing that book.
Thank you for reading it.
I brought it all the way back to London from New Zealand. And
I'll design it for you.
Yeah, you will, And I'll take your mug shot. And that it was really inspiring talking to you. And,
I encourage
everyone to get onto your website and stay in contact with Nick Williams.
Thank you very much indeed.